16 years ago, the present Archbishop of Indianapolis released me from all parochial duties to give my time as I see fit to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous and to the groups of AA throughout the world. During those 16 years, I have traveled almost 1,000,000 miles. I've had the privilege of speaking before approximately 200,000 members of AA from coast to coast and in Canada. I have had the further privilege of speaking on more intimate terms with upward of 10,000 alcoholic men and women in the various retreats I am privileged to give throughout the country. Now, traveling that far and meeting so many alcoholics, I have met a lot of characters along the way. We find every type of character in AA. We find members of the upper crust, you know what the upper crust is? That's a bunch of crumbs held together by a little dough. We find members of the medical profession. Talking about the medical profession, they tell the story about one morning rather early, a gentleman appeared at the tavern before it was open. He was walking up and down, up and down. He was shaking all over, you know, and pretty soon the tavern keeper came along. He opened the tavern. He went behind the bar. This fella rushed in. He put his money on the bar. He says, give me a double shot. Just then the tavern keeper looked around. He said, oh, good morning, doctor. What are you doing these days? The guy said, oh, I'm still doing brain surgery. We even meet those fellows in AA whom we call psychiatrists, believe it or not. You know who they are. They are the good doctors who treat neuroses and psychosis. You know, there's a difference between the two. A person with a psychosis is out of this world. A person with a neurosis is in this world, but he's awfully jittery about it. A person with a psychosis thinks 2 and 2 is 5. A person with a neurosis knows 2 and 2 is 4, but he can't stand it. You know, they tell the story that one time a little girl, 9 years old, was taken to the psychiatrist. And this doctor to whom she went was a very elderly, paternal-type individual. So he patted the little girl on the head. He says, now, tell me, little girl, is it true what they say about you that you hate your daddy? She said, yes, I hate my daddy. Well, the doctor said, how about your mommy? Do you hate her? She said, yes, I hate her. Wish she was dead. Well, the psychiatrist said, how about your little brothers and sisters? Do you hate them? She said, yes, I hate them. I'm going to kill them. Well, the doctor said, and just then he drew up and stroked his chin, looked down, and just then the little girl looked up. She says, some psychosis, eh, doc? We find, too, that one of the things an alcoholic cannot do is tolerate resentments. And we find that resentment usually begins in anger, in getting mad, to use the simple term. And speaking of getting angry, they tell the story of the fellow who was on the 20th Century Limited one time. You know, that's the train that goes between New York City and return. So he was on his way to New York City, and he called a porter to his quarters, and he said, look, porter, I've got to get off this train in Buffalo, New York in the morning. Now, the train got in Buffalo at 5 o'clock in the morning. So he told the porter, now don't let anything stop you from putting me off the train at 5 o'clock. I have got one of the most important appointments of my life to keep there. Yeah, sir, the fellow said. So the train went on through the night, and finally the next morning late, the train pulled into the Grand Central Station. And as the porter stepped off the back platform, whom should he see come running out of the train but this fellow? The fellow grabbed the porter by the nape of the neck. He said, porter, why didn't you awaken me and put me off the train at Buffalo? He said, you caused me to miss the most important appointment of my life. And he swore and he cursed and finally turned on his heel and ran out of the station. Well, just then the station master came along. And he looked at the porter and he said, "Porter, did you ever see anybody so mad in all your life?" "Yeah," said the porter said. "You should have seen the guy I put off at Buffalo." We also have those fellows and gals come to AA whom we call the no God guys and gals. They are the ones who will not or cannot seem to get the idea of a God. In one of the groups that happened one time, and some of the other members of the group were trying to convince this individual that there was a God, but they got nowhere. So finally, one evening after the meeting, one of these fellows said, "Now look, do you mean to tell me that there never has been a time in your whole life when you just out of sheer desperation didn't ask God to help you?" "No, sir." "Yes, sir," he said, "there was one time. Come to think of it, there was one time. Some years ago, I was on a hunting trip up in Canada. And during the hunting trip, a snowstorm came up. It got colder and colder. It snowed harder and harder. It became a veritable blizzard. And then I got lost from my companions. And then it was, as darkness approached, I asked God to help me." Well, the guy smiled and looked at him. He said, "Well, he got you out of it, didn't he?" "No, sir," the fella said. "If an Indian guide hadn't come along, I'd have froze to death." Then traveling so far, I have come through practically all sections of these United States. And up in the town of Albuquerque, they have an Indian with a phenomenal memory. Supposedly, you can ask this Indian anything about his past, and he can immediately tell you. So one time, a visitor came to Albuquerque, and a friend of his took him down to see this Indian. So he asked the Indian, "What did you have for breakfast 5 years ago?" And the Indian immediately says, "Eggs." Well, on the way home, this visitor said to his friend, "Look," he said, "that guy's a fake. Why, he's a phony." He said, "Everybody has eggs for breakfast. I don't believe him." Well, now it so happened that this visitor came back to Albuquerque 7 years later. And as he got off the train, whom should he see standing there on the platform but this Indian? And the thought immediately struck him, "There's that phony. Watch me needle him." So he drew himself up, raised his hand, said, "How?" The Indian said, "Scramble." There's one type of alcoholic we never meet, and that is a dumb alcoholic. Uneducated, but not dumb. You know, speaking of dumbness, there were three young ladies at the movies one afternoon. And while they were there, during the newsreel, the picture of the Pope was flashed on the screen. Well, just then, one of these young ladies made a very disparaging remark about the Pope. Immediately, another of the young ladies got up and walked out. Well, the one who made the remark turned to the one who remained and said, "Mary, why did Helen leave?" "Well," she said, "after all, you know, the remark you made about the Pope, and you know Helen's a Catholic, didn't you know that?" "Oh, yes," she said, "I knew she was a Catholic, but I didn't know he was." Then we find in AA, too, one of the qualities of the average alcoholic, not only that the alcoholic is that way because it's a quality of human nature, but one of the qualities we always find in all the groups, there's some who love to brag, at least a few. Well, anyhow, in one of the groups one time, there was one of these characters who bragged that he knew all the important people of the world personally. Another member of the group got rather tired of listening to this bragging. So one day he called him aside. He said, "I'll tell you what I'm going to do." He said, "I'll bet you $1,000 that I can name three important people in public life, and I'll bet you don't know at least one of them. Why, he said, that's easy. You name them, and I'll show you I know them. Well, he said, I'll tell you what we'll do. If you know all three, I'll pay all the expenses, and I'll give you $1,000. The other fellow said, fine. The other fellow's name was John Doak. So anyhow, the fellow asked him, now who are the three that you claim that you want me to know? So this fellow named off President Kennedy, Prime Minister McMillan, and the Pope. Why, he said, I know them all personally. Okay, so let's go prove it. So they took a plane to Washington. And as they approached the White House lawn, this fellow saw the guard. He went over to the guard and started talking to him for a few moments. Finally, the guard went inside, and who came out but Jack and Jackie. Well, hello, hello, hello. If it isn't John Doak, come in, come in, come in. Well, the other guy said, he sure knows the president and his wife. I have to hand it to him. I bet he don't know McMillan. So they got a plane to London. Went to 10 Downing Street, same thing happened. The fellow went over and talked to the guard. Finally, the guard went inside, came back out, and who came out behind him, his arms outstretched, but Prime Minister McMillan said, well, 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 if it isn't John Doak from the United States, come in, come in, come in. Well, the fellow thought, by golly, he sure knows the Prime Minister. But he don't know the Pope. He said, come on, let's go to Rome. So they got a plane to Rome, and as they approached the Basilica of St. Peter's, and were standing there in the piazza in the front of St. Peter's, the guy said to the other fellow, John Doak said, look, now I'll go inside, and I'll get the Pope, and then I'll come out on the balcony arm in arm with him. Will that prove that I know him? Why, he said, sure, no one but a personal friend could do that. Okay, he says, you wait here. So John went inside, and pretty soon on the balcony appeared this majestic figure all dressed in white, you know, and on his arm, John Doak. Just then a thought struck the fellow. He thought, by golly, I bet he's got somebody dressed as the Pope. So he looked around, he saw a little urchin there on the side. And he said, say, buddy, by the way, is that the Pope up there on the balcony? The little guy looked up, he says, I'm not quite sure, sir, but if it isn't John Doak from the United States. A few months ago, I was in Detroit, Michigan. You know, they have these sightseeing buses up there, these double-deckers. And so one day, one of these buses was going around to the various places of interest, and as the bus would stop, the guide would explain what the certain place was. So they stopped in front of a huge estate, and the driver said, now there on the right is the Dodge estate. Just then, a little lady in the middle of the bus jumped up and she said, you mean Horace Dodge, mister? No, lady, the driver said, John Dodge. Well, the bus went along a little bit further, finally came to another huge estate. And the driver said, now there on the left is the Ford estate. Same little lady jumped up. She said, you mean Henry Ford, mister? No, lady, the driver said, Edsel Ford. Well, the bus went on a little bit further and finally it came to a huge building on the corner. And the driver said, now there is the Christ Cathedral. Absolute silence. Finally, a big bass voice in the back of the bus boomed out and said, go on, lady, ask him. You can't be wrong all the time. I was also through the state of Missouri en route on this trip. You know, that's the state that Harry Truman comes from. I think most of you know who Harry Truman is. But anyhow, they tell the story that one time Eleanor Roosevelt was visiting the Trumans. And when she arrived, Harry was out in back of the house in his garden. So Eleanor and Bess were talking a while, and finally Harry came in and said, oh, hello, Eleanor, how are you? Glad to see you. He said, you know, I've been out in my garden this afternoon. He said, you know, I have a very nice little garden in the back of my house. And today I've been out there spreading manure all over the garden for the fall weather. Well, they talked a while, and finally Harry bid adieu, went back to his garden, and then it was that Eleanor turned to Bess, and she said, "Bess, you should train him better than that. You should train him to say fertilizer." Bess says, "My goodness, it's taken me 30 years to get him to say manure." I've only found one state in the whole United States that has no alcoholics. That's the state of South Carolina. They have alkeholics. They also tell the story of another psychiatrist that had three ladies to come to see him one time with their children. And when the women arrived at the doctor's office, the first one went inside in the inner office to see him. Now, it so happened that the partition between the inner office and the outer office was so thin that those in the outer office could overhear everything that was going on in the inner office. So this first woman who had gone in was telling the doctor what a terrible little girl her daughter was, the awful things that she had done, the terrible circumstances she got messed up in. Well, the doctor let her talk a while, and finally he said, "Now look, lady, just a moment. It isn't your daughter who is at fault, it's you." He said, "You have a compulsion for money." He said, "That's the reason you call her Penny." Well, she finally left, and the next lady went in. The same type of conversation went on. The woman told the doctor what a terrible little girl her daughter was, the awful things she had done. And finally the doctor let her talk and then said, "Look, lady, it's not your daughter who is at fault, it's you." He said, "You have a terrible compulsion for sweets." He said, "That's the reason you call her Sugar." Just then they heard a commotion in the outer office and someone said, "Come on, Shenley, let's get the heck out of here." In all my experience in AA, there's one thing I have noticed on many walls of the meeting halls and of the club rooms and the various places where AA assembles, and that is the expression, "Don't take yourself so damn seriously." Now that means an awful lot. Because the one thing we have lost over the years is our sense of humor. I don't think anyone here who belongs to Alcoholics Anonymous, or even any wife of an alcoholic who now belongs to Alcoholics Anonymous, could see anything humorous about the time we were sobering up that last time. But the reason is because unless a human being enables himself to achieve a sense of humor where he can laugh both at himself and others, not only the road of sobriety, but the road of life becomes very, very difficult. In fact, the Recovery Incorporated, now for those who do not know, the Recovery Incorporated is an organization of people who meet in order to solve specific neurotic problems. They have a very similar saying, "Don't make a federal case out of everything." And so it is with those two ideas I would like to leave you. Don't take ourselves so seriously. No matter what happens today, what has happened yesterday, what will happen tomorrow, we aren't the first ones to whom it has happened. We are only one little speck in the human race. Among millions and millions and millions and millions of people down back through the ages and in the ages of those unborn. We're such a small fry when we really analyze it. And I think that's the most humorous part of life, is to think how often we think ourselves so big, so important, and then suddenly realize someday that we don't mean much at all. You know, there's a lot of people in life, they go on through life trying to find somebody who thinks as much of them as their mother did. You're not going to find that kind of person. Because to every other human being, to the average person, we are not important. In the same expression, not make a federal case out of everything. We have emotional disturbances. Laugh at them. Let them go. Think of some of the humor that we have spoken about for the last 15 or 20 minutes, and perhaps it would help us to realize that we too could fit in with the laughter instead of the tears, because there's no truer saying that was ever made than the one that says, when you laugh, the world laughs with you, but when you weep alone. And you know, and I know, that the very depths of self-pity simply is pinpointing me as someone who is weeping alone over me. Why this big world of ours goes by, not caring, not looking. You know, there's nothing more dead than yesterday's headlines. And no matter how great a thing you do today, tomorrow, that's going to be yesterday. And the only thing that's important to you is today, 24 hours at a time. So it's not only a question of making it worthwhile, but with a light heart, with a smile, with laughter. God doesn't like long pusses. You know, so many people think that a guy walking down the street with a sour puss and a long face and a rosary in one hand and a prayer book in the other, they think he's a saint. He's not a saint. He's cracked. No one was quicker to tell a good humorous story than the saints. And particularly were they not only able to, but very adept at laughing at themselves. Now, of course, the saints didn't go around telling dirty stories. You know, I always kind of wonder why, when a person gets up before a large audience in a public meeting and starts telling what I call dirty stories. I don't know. I believe he just has lost his real sense of humor, because I don't believe the average person goes along with him in liking such stories publicly. I know one fellow got up and he thought he was at a stag meeting. Oh, you've heard about that too. So he looked around. He said, "Just a minute. I was just looking around to see if there's any ladies in the house." Just then a fella got up in the back. He said, "Just a minute, sir." He said, "There's no ladies present, but they're sure and the devil are gentlemen. So let's clean it up." So that's just a little about stories, about humor, about laughter. You know, there's in laughter, one of the best tonics in all the world. I remember reading one time, I forget who was the author, that Christ never smiled. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that Christ never smiled. I think one of the glories of eternity is going to be when we see that divine smile. Because the sense of humor is behind the entire human race. To think that a God could take you and me and all the millions of human beings and create them for His honor and glory. He had to have a sense of humor. You know, that should sink in very, very deeply. Even in that morning period when we get up and take that first look in the mirror, Lord, pity the fellow or the gal who doesn't have a sense of humor. And all the faults and the failings and all the stupid things we think and do as the day goes by, God pity the man or the woman who doesn't have a sense of humor. And as the night falls, we take a few moments to ourselves to take an inventory. And there again see nothing but a repetition of ridiculous thinking and stupid actions. Lord pity the man or the woman who doesn't have a sense of humor. Because you know that's the most difficult job you're going to have in life. And that's the realization that even though you live another 10, 20, 30, 40 years, you're still going to have to accept all those faults and failings to a great degree. That's the most difficult job of adjustment to reality. And believe me, the greatest aid next to the grace of God to adjust with reality in life. And adjustment to reality gives happiness, because adjustment to reality gives the adjustment of will to the divine will. That eliminates friction. That eliminates dissatisfaction. That engenders and promotes happiness, peace of mind, and serenity. And the greatest factor therein involved, next to the grace of God, is a sense of humor. And if I have helped any of you to smile, then I'm grateful to God. And if I have caused anyone to shed a tear anywhere in this world, I don't think there's a greater thing that I have to regret. So let's all have one big laugh. Okay? Let's have a laugh.